But first, where else but to Washington, D.C.? The chaotic scenes on Capitol Hill during the last week provoked a wide range of reactions around the world. The leaders of other democracies expressed shock and distress at the spectacle of a mob besieging the very place which is rather emphatically called the People's House by the lawmakers of the United States. The governments of other regimes, notably China and Iran, couldn't resist issuing some pointed remarks about how well the American system was working, if this was the result. Photos and snatches of video of the day's events were almost instantly turned into memes on social media. And within the United States, even within Congress itself, the astonishment was great. Senior figures in the Republican Party issued statements condemning what happened. There is plenty of soul-searching going on now, says Anthony Zerker, and the shock hasn't yet worn off.
January 6th, 2021, a date which will live in infamy. That's how Democratic Senate Minority Leader, soon-to-be Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer of New York, described the events in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday afternoon. He was echoing the language used by Franklin D. Roosevelt to describe the Japanese surprise attack on Pearl Harbor in December 1941. This week's attack on the U.S. Capitol, by contrast, was committed by enemies domestic, not foreign. The chaos on Wednesday began on the circular grassy expanse south of the White House, an area called the Ellipse, practically in the shadow of the Washington Monument. That was where Donald Trump addressed tens of thousands of his supporters and egged them on, exhorting them to head to the Capitol, where the results of November's presidential election were being formally tabulated, to challenge lawmakers to block the process, fight like hell, and show strength, not weakness. The tone and content of that speech were familiar to those of us who have covered Donald Trump rallies for years. His anger at critics, his invective directed at the political establishment, and the shared bond of grievance he formed with his crowd of supporters made up the core part of his political pitch. I remember attending a Trump rally in Florida back in October 2016, just after the notorious Access Hollywood tapes came out, when it looked like the candidate was heading towards a massive defeat. One of his supporters told me she thought the election was being stolen, and if he lost, there would be violence in the streets. At roughly the same time that the president was concluding his remarks on Wednesday, Republican Senate Majority Leader, soon to be Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, was warning his fellow Republicans not to heed the president's call to action. To do so, he said, would push American democracy into a death spiral and melt the foundations of the republic. It was not long after he spoke those words that the Capitol was taken, falling into the hands of aggressors for the first time since the British burned the building in 1814. For most of the days following the violence, the president was silent. He had been suspended from Twitter and Facebook for making posts sympathetic to the rioters. Finally, on Thursday evening, he released a recorded video, a conciliatory message where he acknowledged his defeat, condemned the violence, and called for healing and reconciliation. Teleprompter Trump had spoken. It was perhaps enough to head off calls for the president's resignation, or removal by his cabinet, or impeachment by Congress. But as we've seen time and time again, unscripted Trump has a habit of reemerging before long, and we are still days away from Joe Biden's inauguration on the 20th of January. Long stretches of silence punctuated by videos or tweets have actually been standard fare for journalists at the White House since November's election. The president's once-packed public schedule has been reduced to almost nothing. The daily guidance we get from the White House at this point only says he will work from early in the morning until late in the evening. He will make many calls and have many meetings. The times I've been at the White House recently have been exercises in monotony. This week, of course, was different. The president had for some time been pointing to the 6th of January as a day of reckoning when his supporters would descend on the nation's capital and register their outrage. I've covered U.S. politics for decades. I've walked those same marble hallways of Congress where rioters clad in military gear and waving Confederate flags ran wild. So the images of chaos in the Citadel of Liberty, as Joe Biden called it on Wednesday, have been particularly staggering. We Americans like to hold ourselves and our democracy up as an example to the world, President Ronald Reagan in the 1980s called America a shining city on a hill, drawing from the words of the nation's early Puritan settlers. The term American exceptionalism has been frequently employed in recent years, a way of suggesting that the United States is somehow unique and special, a model for others to follow. On Wednesday, the example, the model America set was far from exceptional. It was a warning to other nations of what can happen when darker passions run amok. It was a reminder that even citadels of liberty can fall.
That was Anthony Zerker.